Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and you might remember the story of the Odyssey from, say, high school. You know, Odysseus, the Cyclops, the witch Circe, she turns his men into pigs. Author Madeline Miller has written two New York Times bestsellers retelling these classics. Her newest book, Circe, imagines the story of the goddess from her own perspective. Madeline Miller will be speaking at the Brattle Theater in Cambridge tonight. She joins us in studio now. Madeline, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you remember of the Iliad and the Odyssey from school? And what other characters are ripe for a retelling? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can tweet us at Radio Boston. And hey, you can follow this conversation right now on Facebook Live. All right, so Madeline, tell us, who is Circe and what drew you to her specifically?
Sure. So in Homer, Circe is the daughter of the sun god Helios. So she's a goddess, but she is also the first witch in what we call Western literature. And that was a piece of what drew me to her. And she's most famous, or maybe I should say infamous, for turning Odysseus's men into pigs when he arrives on her island. But the part of the story that often gets left out is, first of all, why is she turning men into pigs? But second of all, the fact that after she and Odysseus come to an understanding, she ends up being one of the most helpful characters that he encounters in the entire novel, in the entire epic poem. And so part of what I wanted to do was sort of bring this complexity back to a character that I felt like had been really flattened, not only in the original Homer, but in later retellings where she became just sort of a classic villain, very much in the model of Medea or Clytemnestra, women who sort of rain destruction down wherever they go. So it was that really drew me, this idea of her as an artist, a craftswoman, you know, creating her potions, finding her power that way, as well as wanting to really give voice to this character that I felt like didn't have voice.
So I read the book over the weekend. It was my last summer read, which was awesome. And I had a moment when I was reading the book that reminded me of another moment, which I took my teenage daughter to see Wonder Woman when it came out. And I cried in the middle of the movie because it was the first time in my life I had seen women presented in a genre as the powerful, strong agents of justice and change. It was a whole retelling of something I'd been told in a different way since my childhood. I felt that way about Circe. And I wondered, was there a retelling that you think needed to be done about this strong woman, given how flattened, to use your word, she was in Greek mythology?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it was a feminist project. And by the way, thank you. That's a very handsome compliment to compare it to Wonder Woman.
It was important to me, weirdly. It really was.
But I felt that in general, the women in mythology are little more than ciphers. They're purpose is most often to serve the male hero's story. Either they die to motivate him, or they're an obstacle he has to overcome. That's more like Circe's case. And so part of what I wanted is I wanted to give her the same epic scope that these male heroes, Odysseus, Achilles, have had by right for, you know, millennia now. And so I wanted to set her at the center of the story, to very much flip the kind of script from the Odyssey where she's a cameo. In Circe, Odysseus is the cameo. And I spend much more time focused on her life leading up to the action of the Odyssey and then after as well. And I wanted to include her life in all its messy glory. I didn't want her to be some idealized paragon either. I wanted her to make mistakes and have to live with those mistakes and struggle to do better. And also motherhood is an important part of her story, which is very left out of the epics. We see some sort of mother-child pairings, but from a woman's perspective, there is very little of that. And so that was another part of this sort of the messy fullness of her life that I really wanted.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What other women from literature and mythology deserve to have their messy fullness brought forward? You know, I think about Ophelia maybe, or a Desdemona from Shakespeare, for example. So call, join the conversation. Have you read Madeline Miller's book? How did it inspire you? You talked for just there about motherhood. One of the things that struck me from the story is there's this 6-year period where she's raising a son she eventually has. I won't say any more than that. it is hard and messy, and the kid is tough, and she's a single mom on an isolated island. And, you know, I'm exhausted for her. You don't think of goddesses sort of having to clean diapers and, you know, deal with temper tantrums. But that, it seemed like you really wanted to bring all elements of being a woman alive.
I did. I did. And you know, that is such an important piece of her story. And I wanted to show the work of that. One of the things that I was interested in is sort of alternate modes of being a hero. You know, Odysseus is kind of in the classic mode. He's sneaky, he's tricky, he's an underdog. We follow him as he fights monsters and eventually has his homecoming. But with Circe and with a lot of these other characters, their route to heroism has to be sort of sideways. It has to. So I wanted to really stop and look at that. There is a lot of heroism in parenting. For whoever is doing the parenting, it is a lot of repetitive, hard work. It takes a lot of self-discipline and mental discipline and love and compassion. So all of that. But also looking at, for example, Odysseus's wife, Penelope. And, you know, she's the one who has stayed at home and raised her child.
Literally stayed at home.
Stayed at home, right, but literally, with you know, no ability to really make choices for herself. But she has managed to hold the household together for 20 years while her husband is away. And, you know, that's heroic also. And Odysseus's son, who ends up wanting to sort of walk a different path than his father and break away from his father. That, too, is heroic. And so I wanted to look at these other things that I considered heroic.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Tracy from Beverly, what do you have for Madeline Miller?
Madeline, I want to thank you so much for writing such a beautiful book. And I was particularly taken by the relationship between Circe and Penelope. We often see female relationships as one-dimensional, and it was complicated and touching and just beautifully played out. And I'm wondering what inspired you to take that depth of it.
Well, thank you so much. Penelope does show up in sort of the mythology that we have. She does show up in one of Circe's myths. And so I sort of knew that she was waiting for me in the last quarter of the novel. And I very much wanted Circe's journey to, in some ways, mirror Odysseus's journey. It's a journey of looking for home, of longing for home. But her home isn't, you know, an island named Ithaca. It's a home that she has to create for herself out of sort of a found family, out of friends that she comes to value. And Penelope, for me, was always a really key piece of that. And I think that, you know, I think about the number of times that I have seen women sort of presented as women's friendships sort of in, you know, big blockbuster movies as being very petty and sort of rife with all this manufactured drama. For me, Circe and Penelope, these are two incredibly intelligent women. They are survivors. Of course they would get along.
Let's take one more call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask a question of author Madeline Miller. Ryan from Cambridge is on the line. Ryan, what do you have for Madeline?
Hi, Madeline. So I'm currently halfway through The Song of Achilles, and I just wanted to say I think it's fantastic. And I am, I guess, sort of new to mythology. I hadn't been too interested in it in the past, but this book is a great way to sort of like reintroduce me to some characters I had heard from in the past, and I really look forward to reading Circe. I do have one quick question, though, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Typically, when these stories are told, I noticed the Song of Achilles is written from Patroclus, if I'm pronouncing that correct, his point of view. Is it common for these stories, I guess, to always be told from his point of view, or is it? What made you decide to write from his point of view versus Achilles?
Well, similarly, as with Circe, he was a character that I felt had, although he has had more of a role, I think, than Circe, he's a very mysterious character like her, a very unexplored character. We see him in the Iliad, and speaking of spoilers, this is kind of a spoiler for the Iliad, but it is a 3,000-year-old piece of epic poetry. So in the Iliad, when he dies and Achilles mourns over him so intensely. That moment isn't really explained. Homer has told us that Patroclus is the most beloved companion of Achilles, but he hasn't really expanded on their relationship. He's just showing us basically the end of their relationship. And so by going into Patroclus's perspective, I felt like I could tell the whole story. And part of what I wanted to do with Song of Achilles was make it a love story, as I was taking Circe's story, which is usually treated as domestic fare, and given it epic scope, I wanted to take this epic story and tell it from a very intimate perspective.
So Simone from Brighton is on the line, and Simone is going to ask you a question I wanted to ask you anyway, so I'm going to let Simone do it. Go ahead, Simone. What's your question for Madeline?
Hi, Madeline. I'm such a huge fan of your book. I can't wait till the next one comes out.
Thank you.
But I work as a gardener, and I just love the way you wrote about plants and how you kind of capture this almost spiritual relationship that she has with them. And I'm just wondering how you did research for that, or how you found out about which plants were medicinally used in Greek mythology, or how you were inspired to write about them.
Sure. It was research that I loved doing. Since I was a child, I have always loved physic gardens, which are sort of oftentimes botanical gardens will have them. They're sort of a small garden that has various herbs that are used for medicinal purposes, or that people thought could be used for medicinal purposes. Sometimes you get both. And I was always really drawn to those. And I used to spend hours sort of searching out the physic gardens whenever I would go to a new city. And so it was all kind of there. I didn't know I was prepping for writing Circe, but I think I was. And then I you know, looked through all the plants that are mentioned are ones that come out of some sort of ancient source somewhere. People have asked me if the spells work. I haven't gotten it to work, but if you have, please tell me.
Well, besides, you say in the book that witchcraft is really just a matter of will, so does that mean you just don't want it badly?
It must be. It must be.
I do want to stay on this question of research for a minute, because there were countless times. I mean, okay, so in one interview you talk about the fact that Circe only appears in the Odyssey for about two books. Yep. But you give her a whole novel here. So you had a lot of research and choices to make about what pieces of story to emphasize, what other pieces of Greek mythology to tie in. How long do you research before you write? And how much work did this take?
Well, in a way, I feel like I get to cheat with my research a little bit because my background is in classics. So I have already, you know, I'm familiar with these things in the ancient Greek.
Yeah, you still did the work.
It's true. It's true. But I feel like I sort of have that as my bedrock. So when I look for stuff on top of it, I'm sort of expanding this knowledge that I already have. I did a lot on ancient weaving because I knew very, very little about sort of ancient textiles and that process. And that was another piece of Circe's artistry. Not only does she create beautiful things through witchcraft, but she also does it through her weaving. And so I really wanted to get that right and sort of think about loom technology. Only about 1% of that made it into the novel, which I think was the correct amount. But I like to do a lot of very broad research just because I think you never know what little tidbit is going to stick in your mind and, you know, eventually prove fruitful. But it's true that there is a lot of sort of picking and choosing. And for me, it's always I just have to go. There's sort of an old theater saying, go where the heat is. And I feel like that's sort of what I did. Is what are the things, you know, hear all the myths that Circe appears in. Which are the ones that speak to me? I used almost all of them, with the exception of the one where she turns this guy to a woodpecker, which did not interest me.
All right. So ever since I studied Greek mythology as a kid, I've been fascinated by Prometheus, who stole fire and gave it to man, and then was sentenced to eternal torment by Zeus. That's a key. He's a story in your book. As a child, Circe's kind to him when others aren't. Could you read us a little section of your book that has to do with Circe and Prometheus?
Sure. The torches were fading, and the shadows lapped at us like dark water. Is it true that you refused to beg for pardon, and that you were not caught but confessed to Zeus freely what you did? It is. Why? Prometheus's eyes were steady on mine. Perhaps you will tell me. Why would a god do such a thing? I had no answer. It seemed to me madness to invite divine punishment, but I could not say that to him, not when I stood in his blood. Not every god need be the same, he said. What I might have said in return, I do not know. A distant shout floated up the corridor. It is time for you to go now. Alecto does not like to leave me for long. Her cruelty springs fast as weeds and must any moment be cut again. It was a strange way to put it, for he was the one who would be cut. But I liked it, as if his words were a secret, a thing that looked like a stone, but inside was a seed. I will go then, I said. You will be well? Well enough, he said. What is your name? Circe. Did he smile a little? Perhaps I only flattered myself. I was trembling with all I had done, which was more than I had ever done in my life. I turned and left him, walking back through those obsidian corridors. In the feasting hall, gods still drank and laughed and lay across each other's laps. I watched them. I waited for someone to remark on my absence, but no one did, for no one had noticed. Why would they? I was nothing, a stone. One more nymph child among the thousand thousands.
It's beautiful, and there's so much there. As far as I know, I don't think that this was part of Homer's original story. Why put this in the book?
So for me, I think one of the essential things, and I think this is true of Song of Achilles as well, that I'm really interested in is this idea of empathy. And Circe is born to the gods who, if you know ancient Greek mythology, are absolutely brutal. They are petty. They are filled with spite. They are angry. They will hold on to grudges for forever. Basically, you know, if we were going to psychologically diagnose them today, we'd call them sociopathic narcissists. And Circe is different. She is able to feel for other people. And here is the first time. So she's sort of born into this family and she feels very different, but she doesn't really know why. And so it felt really important for her to meet up with another one of these gods who has the ability to feel empathy. And Prometheus, of course, you know, sacrifices himself to bring fire and civilization to mankind. So it's, you know, great empathy for humankind. So that felt important. And, you know, I felt like there was a very fine line. I felt like he and Circe needed to have this conversation, but I also justified it because Prometheus is a huge, his myth touches the myths of Oceanus and Helios, who are Circe's grandfather and father, respectively. So they're in the Prometheus myth already, so it made sense that sort of she would have a way into that myth. And I always tried to sort of make sure that there was a path in, that I wasn't just, you know, creating it out of nothing. But really, that whole idea of empathy also sort of came to me from this throwaway description of Circe in Homer, which is that he calls her the dread goddess who speaks like a human. And that sort of speaking like a human really resonated with me and sort of became this idea of her ability to feel empathy.
That is beautiful. All right. I've got about 15 seconds left with you. What comes next?
I am thinking about The Tempest. Shakespeare is the other thing I love. And Virgil's Aeneid, which is my heart.
So small things.
Really. Just small things.
Madeline Miller is the author of the New York Times bestseller Circe and the Song of Achilles. She'll be speaking at the Brattle Theater tonight at 6 o'clock. Madeline, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wuthman. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi, and I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.